These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Listening to the opening of the original Star Trek, where of course you may know that Leonard Nimoy starred as Spock. So he passed away this past week, and I wanted to make a small memorial for him. And yes, he was an inspiration for all of us science fiction fans. Yes, that was my small moment for Leonard Nimoy. And now we're going to move on to the first segment of this show, Nerd Nerd Nerdy. I am Titania, and you're listening to radio.dominican.edu. We are going to talk about some news in the nerdy world. Today I have some very juicy news for you, perhaps not the first one. Perhaps if you listened to the show last week, you remember when we talked about Jared Leto and how he's gonna star in Suicide Squad. That is the new new DC movie for some of our favorite DC villains. Jared Leto is gonna play the Joker. Well, that's quite an interesting character. And actually, there has been some pictures have been revealed of him cutting his hair to play the role. Not only has been gaining weight, as we talked about last week, but he's also cut his hair. So not anymore of the Jared Leto Jesus look. We've lost that to the Joker. I'm sorry. But, well, he's going to be handsome anyway, right? I'm going to go on and talk about some gaming news. Now, we all know about the Unreal Engine 4, right? This is if you don't know anything about gaming, engines is what engineers use, like gaming engineers use to build games. And actually, Unreal Engine is actually in its fourth, let's say, installment. I don't know the word that you use for it, but the Unreal Engine, now Unreal Engine 4, is a real popular engine that it's built by Epic Games. And now it's free. It's actually not open source, but free. And it's free for everybody that wants to try it. So what does this mean? It means that you can now start developing your own games. And you can also use it for film, animation, visualization to VR, or even in education. You can use it for anything you want. But there's a catch, of course. They are not going to be letting you use it for free without a catch. Once you ship it, and the developers, that means the ones that created this application, will have, they will get 5% of the royalties of the game that has been developed after it gains $3,000 per quarter. So, this engine, for those of you who do not know, has been used in many top video games, and it's used by many top developers, including Epic Games. And it includes 100% of the C++ source code. So, that's good news. There's a quote here from the CEO of Epic, Tim Sweeney, that says, "In early 2014, we took the step of making Unreal Engine 4 available to everyone by subscription of at $19 per month. We put all of our source code online, available to all who sign up. We flipped the switch and crossed our fingers. The past year has been a whirlwind for everyone at Epic Games. Our community has grown massively. The quality and variety of creative work being done has been breathtaking. When we ask people to submit their projects to be shown this year at GDC, we had the challenge of picking just 8 from over 100 finalists that were all good enough to show. The state of Unreal is strong, and we've realized that as we take away barriers, more people are able to fulfill their creative visions and shape the future of the medium we love. That's why we're taking away the last barrier to entry and going free. In Epic's 25th year as an independent company, we have seen no time of greater opportunity for developers than today. Whatever your development aspirations, Epic stands with you both as a technology provider and as a fellow game developer, counting on UE4 to power our own game. So that's pretty good news, guys. If you want to develop your own game, you can count on Unreal Engine 4. Moving on to virtual reality, there has been some stir-up around the new headset, the new virtual reality headset that Steam wanted to present this week, but they couldn't hold up the news, and actually it has been released that HTC is partnering with Valve to release the HTC Vive VR headset. So this is quite good news, at least in my respect. I think that VR gaming is good news I think it's good news, at least. I don't think I'm gonna use it. I don't think I'm gonna play it. I don't think it's suitable for every type of gamer, but at least it's available. It's gonna be available to the public later this year. Also, Oculus and Project Morpheus the developers had said that they're going to release a public edition for later this year. So this is the year of virtual reality, guys. Either you jump on it or you don't, but I don't know, you should if you really want to. It's going to have different specs, of course, than the Oculus and the Project Morpheus, but it still looks pretty good. You should judge it with your own eyes. I'm not an expert in specs of this kind, but if you are, then you should totally check it out. Next, moving on, we have the Adventure Time film that it was bound to come eventually is going to be developed by the Lego Movie producers. That's totally good news. I'm excited about that. So the Warner Brothers announced its plans today to develop the full-length Adventure Time movie. The cartoon is totally very popular. I watch it, and if you don't, you should. It's totally insane. So the Lego Movie producers, Chris McCrae and Roy Lee, are going to pitch in to produce this film. And what I'm not really certain about, at least the information has not been released, if it's going to be another Lego movie, like an Adventure Time Lego movie, or if they're going to produce a cartoon feature film of Adventure Time just with their own creative ideas, which would be cool too. I mean, they are geniuses, of course. If you haven't seen Lego movie, you should. Lego Batman movie, the sequel that is planned too, so you should hold up for that. That character stole the movie totally. Next, we have some controversial news, it's barely news, but still we have to talk about it, as it is the quibbler, of course. So Michelle Rodriguez said that minorities should stop stealing white superhero roles. This sounds familiar, right? It sounds familiar, but in the wrong way. Like, it should be the other way around. Like, people saying that white roles in movies or in cinema in general should be, like, more interracial, let's say, or just more open to other races, inverted commas. But actually, this woman said that minorities should not steal white superhero roles. Then she went on and just started saying things that are not okay in my respect. So let's just give some background. This starts because she said these statements to TMZ, and of course that's why they blew up like this. But there is an unknown rumor going around that she's going to be running up for the role of Jessica Cruz, that it's one of the few female Green Lanterns opposite to Hal Jordan and Jon Stewart. But she said, apparently she's not okay with that. I don't know why. So what she said is, that is the silliest thing I've ever heard. I think it's so stupid that this whole minorities in Hollywood thing, but it's so stupid. It's like, stop stealing all the white people's superheroes. Make up your own. I guess I don't know. I really don't know what to say. She sounds like an internet troll at this point. But yeah, everyone raged up and started commenting on this, because it literally, she sounds like an internet troll, a person that you just cannot argue with, because she literally makes no sense. Then when she saw the, like, what her arguments started creating on social media, she tried to rectify herself. But actually what she said was this: what I really meant was that ultimately, at the end of the day, there's a language, and the language you speak in Hollywood is successful franchise. I think there are many cultures in Hollywood that are not white that can come up with their own mythology. I'm just saying that instead of trying to turn a girl character into a guy, or instead of trying to turn a white character into a black character or Latin character, I think that people should stop being lazy, and people should actually make an effort in Hollywood to develop their own mythology. It's time to stop trying to take what's already there and fit a culture into it. I think it's time to write our own mythology and our own story. Every culture. What I have to say to her, it's like, mythologies are everywhere, and all cultures have their own mythology, independent from superheroes, and superheroes have their own mythology, that it's not necessarily white mythology. I mean, it's just you as a person related to white mythology. And perhaps as regards DC Comics, not in the case of Green Lantern Corps, but perhaps in the case of DC Universe in general, it is related to Greek mythology. And in the case of Marvel, it is related to Nordic mythology. And that does not make it white per se, but it does make it like at a certain region. But then if you take a look at the stories of the superheroes, they can be updated, and they can be taken to the future and taken to today. So when you look at Green Lantern Corps, you can have a Latin or a black Green Lantern, because it does not depend on whether they are white or not. Green Lanterns are not judged upon their race. They are judged upon their value of character and upon their willpower in this specifically. So, I don't think you're getting the point. Of course, you must take into account that this whole problem has been around because Michael B. Jordan was casted as the Human Torch, and the Human Torch is actually a white character, and Michael B. Jordan actually is a black guy. And actually, this I have a problem with, because the Human Torch is the sibling of, if I'm not mistaken, the Invisible Girl in the four guys who are friends. You know the franchise that I'm talking about. I'm not a fan of them, but still, they are siblings, so they are brother and sister. You cannot have a brother and sister, I mean, by blood, that one is totally black and one is totally white. And that's just fact of life. If they are blood related, you cannot have, like, you're gonna have them like that. They can be adopted, but I mean, that's just life, and that's the way it is. That I'm not okay with, because it was written that way, and I'm kind of a Nazi when it comes to that. I'm sorry that terms offense anyone. It's just a term that people in the fandom use when it comes to being like overly protective of things like grammar or things that you really care about, like comics or the canon. When you're speaking about the canon, you're speaking about the work that has been written by the author itself, and not something that has been created by someone else. For example, right now, what was created in the first place was two white siblings, and not a black and a white sibling, if you understand what I'm saying. So, also, Jason Momoa was cast as Aquaman, and Jason Momoa is an ethnic guy, and he's not a white guy, a white blonde guy, as we all know Aquaman. Anywho, I really like the way that Jason Momoa looks in the posters for Aquaman that have been released, and I really think that he should be interesting. Perhaps I'm a little bit biased because I really like Jason Momoa for Game of Thrones. We're running out of time in this segment. I had more things to talk to you about, but we're gonna leave it here for now. We're gonna go into a little break. I'm gonna leave you with a song. And the next segment, we're going to talk about a little recommendations for Tim Burton movies, the new, the old, and the ugly. So stay tuned for that here at radio.dominican.edu. I'm DJ Titania, and we're going on a break here at Nerd Nerd Nerdy. Stay tuned.
All the time. Work, 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 Sinora, work your body line. Work, 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 Sinora, work it all the time. My girl's name is Sonora, I tell you friends I adore her. And when she dances, oh brother, she's a hurricane in all kinds of weather. Jump in the line, rock your body in time. Okay, I believe you. Jump in the line, rock your body in time. Okay, I believe you. Jump in the line, rock your body in time. Okay, I believe you. Jump in the line, rock your body in time. Shake, 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 Sinora, shake your body line. Shake, 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 Sinora, shake it all the time. Work, 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 Sinora, work your body line. Work, 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 Sinora, work it all the time. You can talk about cha-cha, tango waltz or the rumba. Signora's dance has no title. You jump in the saddle, hold on to the bridle. Jump in the line, rock your body at night. Okay, I believe you. Jump in the line, rock your body at night. Rock your body, child. Jump in the line, rock your body at night. Somebody help me. Jump in the line, rock your body at night. Shake, 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 Sinora, shake your body line. Shake, 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 Sinora, shake it all the time. Work, 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 Sinora, work your body line. Yeah. Work, 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 Sinora, work it all the time. Sinora, she's a sensation, the reason for aviation. And fellas, you got to watch it. When she wind up, she bottom, she go like a rocket. Jump in the line, rock your body in time. Okay, I believe you. Jump in the line, rock your body in time. Heist those skirts a little higher. Jump in the line, rock your body in time. Off the chimney. Jump in the line, rock your body in time. Shake, Sinora. Shake your body line. Work, 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 Sinora. Work it all the time. Dance, 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 Sinora. Dance it all the time. Work, 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 Sinora. Work it all the time. Sinora dances calypso. Left to right is the tempo. And when she gets the sensation, she go up in the air, come down in slow motion. Jump in the line, rock your body in time. Okay, I believe you. Jump in the line, rock your body in time. Somebody help me. Jump in the line, rock your body in time.
Welcome again to Nerd Nerd Nerdy, and now we're going to talk about in this segment of the new, the old, and the ugly of Tim Burton movies. Perhaps you know, and or you have already seen the three movies that I'm going to talk about, and that's very much okay, because you're going to know what I'm talking about. So first, the new. Actually, this is not the newest movie by Tim Burton, because the new movie that's Big Eyes, I haven't seen, because in Argentina this has not been released yet, and I haven't got the time to go and watch it now. So there you go. I'm going to talk about Frankenweenie. That's not the last one, but the the other one. It was released in 2012, and And for those of you who haven't seen it, you should, because it's totally cool. And first, you should see the short film. This is a live action movie, as was the short film, but the short film had the voice of Vincent Price narrating everything. And I'm actually not only a fan of Tim Burton, but a fan of Vincent Price too. Vincent Price had the most amazing voice ever. I mean, if you don't know what I'm talking about, like, you shouldn't be listening to me right now. You should be listening to Vincent Price, really. So, this short film, it was named Frankenweenie 2, and it was released in 1984, and that was what launched his career. And This new film, Frankenweenie, new in between inverting commas, it takes the short film and it enlarges it. So what it is, it is a film that it's based on it, and it tells the story about this kid that has this dog that's called Sparky. So this kid has this dog, and the dog is hit by a truck, and it dies, of course. But as you may have guessed, or may have seen in the movie, the little kid decides to make an experiment because he feels lonely. In the movie, he gets this idea because of a class, because they are making some frog legs twitch in class with electricity. So what he does is he takes his dog out of the grave and takes it into his attic. That's actually a very big attic. That's actually like a little bit frightening for me. So he takes it into the attic, and as Frankenstein did in Mary Shelley's book, he doesn't build it from parts, but he does revive him with the help of a lightning. So what happens is that he tries to keep it secret, but then all the kids start to perform these kinds of experiments with their late pets too. And then everything starts becoming a mess. So it's not the best Tim Burton movie, in my opinion, but it's really fresh. Well, not fresh in the sense. It's fresh out of the grave, perhaps. And I really like this his sense of humor. I think that it's grotesque, but at the same time, it's really enlightening for me. I like the way he portrays life and death and how they are really close. And the memento mori that it's everywhere in his movies just makes you feel a little bit alive when you finish watching them. At least that's how I feel when I finish watching one of his movies, especially one like Frankenweenie. And who hasn't had a pet that you wanted to revive? I mean, I have lost a pet that I wanted to for it to come back. But I mean, you can't, and that's the point. The next movie, the old movie that I'm going to talk about, is actually one of my favorite movies of all time, and it's Beetlejuice. And it's also about zombies and ghosts, as it couldn't be no other with Tim Burton. It's actually the best kind of topic for him. So, yeah. Beetlejuice is a movie that reminds me of my childhood. I had, like, the first time I watched it, I was 10 years old. It's a very old movie, and I shouldn't have liked it, but in a weird sense, I did. It's this gritty 80s movie, and it just, I don't know, like the way that Winona Ryder plays her part just make me feel inevitably connected with her, and as many other little girls did probably, and just the way that she's ostracized from the rest of the world, or she feels like that at least, is a problem that's really common amongst teenagers. And it's not only a fantasy movie. I mean, it's really comic. It's really funny. The movie's really funny. Of course, it has humor. I mean, they are ghosts that had to undergo all this paperwork, and their houses being invaded, inverted commas, by living humans that are so much skeptics that they want to know about them, and they want to make the house into a theme park. And they are not okay with that, obviously. Who would be? And so they call upon the exorcists, the bio-exorcists that is Beetlejuice, that has this terrible reputation in the undead world, that he is Michael Keaton, he is these kind of zombie, kind of white, greenish, devilish body that makes all this. He's a womanizer. He makes sexist jokes and racist jokes, and he's that kind of guy that will help you only if there is something else for him to take. And this character that is very interesting, I really liked him in the movie, but then when I saw the cartoon, I was really impressed with the way that it had changed. I really couldn't understand why Beetlejuice and Lydia were friends. I mean, he obviously tried to force her to marry him, and now we understand, like, it was totally rape, but still, in the cartoon, it's a Cartoon Network cartoon, and it was a totally happy cartoon where they were friends, and Lydia used Beetlejuice as kind of an undead boyfriend, and Beetlejuice took Lydia out of her horrible, dull life, and he took her away into the undead world where she had other friends, obviously Beetlejuice friends, and they could just go around and have fun without having to worry about Lydia's parents or school. And that was kind of creepy because they shouldn't have had this relationship. I mean, in the original movie, she's obviously doing that only to save the ghost couple. And I'm sorry if I'm spoiling the movie for anyone. I mean, it's not a spoiler anymore. There's a statute of limitations for spoilers, or at least there should be, of 20 years. I mean, it's not that hard to watch something after 20 years. And it's a cult movie. I mean, someone talked to me and said, you're spoiling Pulp Fiction, or you're spoiling The Godfather, or you're spoiling, I don't know, The Reservoir Dogs. I mean, watch it already. It's over and done with. But still, Beetlejuice. It's an excellent movie, and you should watch it because it's fun. And, as I was saying with Frank and Wee, Tim Burton uses his sense of humor, like his witty sense of humor that crosses this line between life and death, and that's what I really liked about him in his early days. I really liked The Nightmare Before Christmas. I know it's only one recommendation, but I'm gonna recommend it anyway. The Nightmare Before Christmas, I loved it. It was one of my favorite movies growing up, and I know all the songs. I mean, it's his stop motion movies are really good too, like in general, but The Nightmare Before Christmas is just a jewel for me. It's a movie that you cannot miss if you're into this kind of cult movies that just don't leave your mind ever. It just talks about how, again, not only perhaps not much life and death, but how the concept of holidays, or just the concepts in general of everything, can change between people, and people can have a different viewpoint of how things should go or how things are, and that's not bad. It's just different, but people are going to want to, like, take you down and bombard you and just kill you. And that's not okay. And, I mean, it's not in general. But Jack just wanted to do something nice in his own way. And he wasn't accepted for it. I mean, he tried to take Christmas. It wasn't such a nice thing what he did. He tried to take Christmas as his own. But at the same time, he did it from the bottom of his heart. Like, he just wanted to experience things he was so naive. I mean, he is a skeleton, but at the same time, he's this young teenager that just wants to go around the world and enjoy things because he's bored of the same stuff. But at the end of the day, when he goes and presents what he has done and waited for such a long time, finally he gets only rejection and he's shut down. Finally, for the ugly, I have Alice in Wonderland by Tim Burton, of course. And perhaps some of you may find this choice controversial. It totally is. But in my respect, is the worst movie he's ever done. I mean, it was by commission. Most of them are by commission. But this one in particular, I think it doesn't do anything for me. It doesn't do anything in respect of his own world, in his own imagery, and the way he speaks to me, and the, as I was saying, like his own world of fantasy that he had created through all these years, and suddenly he comes up with this, and it's just nothing. It just does nothing. It doesn't add or contribute to it. I think it actually destroys some of it in my brain. So it not only destroyed his own fantasy world, it destroyed Alice in Wonderland, like the Wonderland in itself. It destroyed it because I don't think it's something that can be combined with Tim Burton's imagination. I think when they were combined, like they clashed, actually. Because when I imagine Wonderland, I do imagine something like when like Disney portrayed it, or something like if you watch Once Upon a Time in Wonderland is something that I really like, something that I think portrayed at least the environment very well. A whimsical and full of nature and flowers and color. That's something that I really liked about it. But then suddenly we have a desert, a forest that it's practically dead, a chess mat that is in the middle of nowhere, a house like the Mad Hatter's house that's in the middle of the forest, and two castles that are in the middle of nowhere too. I mean, that's not Wonderland for me. That's not the whimsical land of joyness and candleland and stuff. Nothing happens there for me. It's just like the return to Oz. And actually, it's the name of the film is Alice in Wonderland. It's not Alice Through the Looking Glass. So, but he mixed up both stories, and that for me is unforgivable. As I was talking about the canon earlier, here it's something that he does not respect one of the timelines. He mixes them up, and it doesn't end up being the best of stories, because he wanted to make the Mad Hatter and the Red Queen very important. But only the Red Queen is very important. The Mad Hatter has a secondary role. And although I love his performance, like Johnny Depp's performance, I love it. But it's not enough to justify the butchery of the story. It really is not. The story, like the way he had to portray it, it became too linear, and so he had to cut out parts and put together parts that did it. In the end, it doesn't make sense. In the end, you have this war that just doesn't make sense. If you're paying attention, it's just a war, yeah, war in the middle of nowhere because, just cause. And that's not okay. It's not a particularly breakthrough adaptation, in my opinion. There have been a lot of adaptations of Alice in Wonderland throughout the ages, and I think that he could have done something else with it. Perhaps he was too constrained by the way he sees the world, and I think that worked against him. What I do need to put a point on it is the CG, the computer generated graphics of this movie are absolutely outstanding. Like, it looks beautiful. It just doesn't make sense. Okay, we're going on a break now. We're going to listen to a little song. Just for those of you who don't know, the song we listened to earlier was Jump in the Line from Beetlejuice. It's the song that they play at the end of the movie. So now we're going to a little break. It's just a tiny break that we're going to listen to now. And we're going to come back with another segment. We're going to come back with The Hitchhiker's Guide to Dungeons and Dragons. Stay tuned for that here in Nerd Nerd Nerdy with Titania in the radio.dominican.edu. So bye-bye. See you in the next segment. Welcome again to Nerd Nerd Nerdy with Titania here at radio.dominican.edu. We have a new segment here, The Hitchhiker's Guide to Dungeons and Dragons, and I'm going to explain to you what Dungeons and Dragons is, what we do when we play Dungeons and Dragons, etc., etc., etc. I play Dungeons and Dragons. I played D&D, as we call it, everyone calls it. For 7 years now, I am actually a dungeon master, a term that you will learn later on today. And it's a very nice game, we could say. It's a very fun game. It's a very fulfilling game if you play right, if you find the right people to play with. So here we go. Dungeons and Dragons, or D&D, is a fantasy tabletop role-playing game, or RPG. Now it's owned by Wizards of the Coast, and it was first published in 1974. So it has been around for a while, guys. This is nothing new. People, when they talk about these kinds of things, they actually don't know how long these things have been going around. But D&D was first published in 1974. Think about that. The generations of nerds, guys. Okay. So, D&D started from wargaming. And actually, at some point we're going to talk about wargaming, how it developed until today, and to something like Warhammer 40K and Warhammer in general. But now we're talking about D&D. So it developed from that, but it assigns one player, a specific character to a player instead of a military formation. So you have one player, one character, and a dungeon master serves as the referee or the storyteller, and he or she also maintains the setting where the adventure occurs and where the role-playing occurs. So the characters are called the party, so they form the party, and they interact with the setting's inhabitants and with each other. So these forms, they have to solve dilemmas, they have to engage in battles, they have to gather treasure and knowledge. In the process, they earn experience points, and they become increasingly powerful over a series of sessions. This is not something you play one night. Not generally, I mean. There are one-shots, as they are called, that you play one day only. But generally, you gather a few of your friends, and you play throughout a series of sessions, and you form an adventure that you play throughout several months or even years. So, D&D has had many editions. We are now actually in the fifth edition that has just now been published last year. But the most popular was 3.5, at least in my opinion, that was the best one. Fourth edition is very accessible to new players that just want to get started. It's very easy to understand and very engaging in the first move. So perhaps if you just want to get started and see how it goes, you want to grab fourth instead of 3.5 or Pathfinder. Or Pathfinder is actually another game, but it improves 3.5. So, moving on. D&D is a structured game, but it's open-ended. So there are many ways you can play it. There are many ways it can end. There is no clear win situation. There is no clear lose situation. There's just things that go on in the world. It's like a parallel universe. So it normally occurs indoors, though you can play outdoors. It's actually really fun when you play outdoors. And the participants, the people that are going to game, they sit around a table with their character sheets. So each player gets a character, and with that you have to have your character sheets. That these character sheets represent the individual they are role-playing in the fictional setting. So when they're working together as a group, these player characters, they are described as party. And they often have an area of specialty that contribute to the success of the party as a whole. So, for example, you may have heard terms as rogue, cleric, fighter, mage, wizard, etc. These are terms that are used to describe the areas of specialty that these characters will have in the game. So they, for example, the fighter is a specialized fighter, of course. And the cleric, for example, what he does is turn undead. And the rogue, what he does is use a bow, for example. Or he can also use herbs, or he can... Oh no, sorry, that's the ranger. I have played 7 years of D&D, but in Spanish, guys, I'm sorry. The rogue... he is a sneaky kind of guy, so he goes in the shadows and he backstabs the monsters. So, during the course of the play, each character has directs the actions of his or her character. Each player directs the actions of his or her character and its interactions with the other characters in the game. This activity is performed through the verbal impersonation of the characters by the players, and they also have a variety of social and other skills, for example, logic, mathematics, and imagination. This can be rolled. What is rolled? You have dice in this game that represent the what cannot be. For example, in life, you cannot predict everything. So the dice represent what's unpredictable about life. So you can be a very experienced fighter, but you can swing a blow to a monster, and that blow can or cannot hit. It depends on that unpredictable thing about life. And that is represented by the dice. So you roll a die. In D&D, this is represented by a 20-sided die. But you will also need, depending on what you hit the monsters, with what weapon you hit them, or with what kind of spells you hit them, you will need a set of die. It has a four-sided die, a six-sided die, a 2 10-sided die, because you can also have percentile type of rolls that you need 2 10-sided die, one to represent the percentile and one to represent the other side of the percentile. A 12-sided die and the 20th-sided die. And I think I'm missing one. It will come up eventually. So, you have the dungeon master in the party that tells the story with the players. So, according to the rules of the game and the dungeon master interpretation of those rules, he or she will select and describe the non-player characters or NPCs that the party encounters, the settings in which these interactions occur, and how these encounters finally turn out based on the player's choices and actions. These encounters often take the form of battles with monsters. Monsters is a generic term that is used to describe potentially hostile beings. Let's say animals, aberrant beings, mythical creatures, it depends. So, whatever happens in the game is determined by the actions of the players and what the dungeon master sets them to do. What you really need to have to play is the rule books, or you need to at least have read them, the character sheets for each player. You need also pencils and rubber. You need also the set of dice, and the current editions also assume that you have a mat or somewhere where you can put miniature figures or markers on a surface that's gridded, so that you can plan out the battles with the monsters, because you have limited movement during battles, and in that way it's easier to know where you're moving and who can you hit or not. So there are also a lot of accessories that are available to enhance the game. There are a lot of expansion rule books. 3.5 has like 100 expansions. And there are also pre-designed adventures that are usually very fun, especially if your DM is not very experienced or you're lazy. And there are also various campaign settings. Basically there are three settings. There are Greyhawk, Eberron, and Forgotten Realms. Greyhawk is the basic D&D setting, like fantasy setting, fantasy medieval setting that you all know. There are no extra rules. Eberron is a steampunk setting, and Forgotten Realms is a setting that's like a dystopian setting, not in the future, but actually in a fantasy dystopian setting, if that makes any sense to you. Like, if it was all blown out. So, yeah. Also, you have Ravenloft, that it's kind of your horror fantasy setting, where the monsters are very, very powerful and deadly. That's very fun to play, too. So, the D&D mechanics, they use dice, as I have said, to resolve random events. And I was missing the D8. You abbreviate the eight-sided die instead of saying it's eight-sided die, you say D8 or D20 or D12, blah blah. So before the game begins, you have to have a session where you create the characters, and this is the most excruciating pain a D&D player has, a tabletop gamer has in general, because it's really a lot of time that you have to put into it, and if you're new at it, it will take you quite a long time planning your character and just putting the points in it that you have to put on correctly. In D&D, the player determines his or her ability scores. First, that consists of strength, constitution, dexterity, intelligence, wisdom, and charisma. And from that, you take different things, and then you start to build your character and the mathematics of your character from that. D&D is a very mathematical game. For those of you who do not like mathematics, there are other tabletop games that are actually much more narrative and not at all mathematical or logical. So perhaps those would be much more suited for you. I'm going to talk about them not today, but other week. So stay tuned for that. But D&D is very fun if you have the right crowd to play with. Actually, that's true for any tabletop game. So, as I said, during the game, players describe their PC's intended actions. So, for example, punching an opponent, picking a lock, or they converse with other NPCs or other PCs or the DM in character. In character, that is to say, they play out what their character means to say, and they get the result of their response by the DM. And that's exactly how everything works out. And then perhaps they need to roll the dice or not. And then when you finally end the session, you get experience points that allow you to gain levels. This is not true for every tabletop game, but this is true for D&D. So you also have hit points, but you don't have mana. You don't have mana here. It's managed by amount of spells per day. So yeah, that's how it is. So also, perhaps you know that there was controversy and notoriety around Dungeons & Dragons. It has received negative publicity around the years because there were some suicides and some murders connected to it around the 80s and the 90s, but it has nothing to do with the game. It has to do with people that are mentally unstable. So yeah, I just wanted to clear that out. And finally, before we go, I wanted to mention the Neverwinter multiplayer, massive multiplayer online role-playing game that is based on Dungeons & Dragons and developed by Wizards of the Coast. And it's also inspired in the Neverwinter Saga by R.A. Salvatore. And also the music that we were listening to is of Baldur's Gate. That is a game that it's based on D&D mechanics. And Baldur's Gate 1 and 2 are very good games. They are very old, though, and they have not aged well. So they are quite hard to play if you do not know anything about D&D. But if you are into D&D, or if you just want a challenge, you perhaps want to buy them. Baldur's Gate 2 Enhanced Edition is available on Steam. I think it's $20. Also, if you want to get started, you can about in D&D, you can buy a Dungeon Master's Guide. A Dungeon Master's Guide, if you don't have anyone who's a Dungeon Master, that would be good. But first, you need to read the Adventurer's Guide, like the core rule book, and the Monster's Guide. Those are the three books you need to get started in D&D. Okay, guys, so that was the show. That was Nerd Nerd Nerdy. I want to thank you guys for listening to me. I was Titania. This is radio.dominican.edu. And I'm going to leave you with the song that ends my show every week. This is Exile, and it's a song that from Portal 2. I hope you like it. It's very calming for the end of the night. And I hope you have a good night. We will resume tomorrow with more shows. Have a good night.
Exile. It takes your mind again. Exile. Takes your mind again. You got sucker's luck. Have you given up? Does it feel like a trial? Does it trouble your mind? Sucker's luck.